Hello, this is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Liscalzo. I started broadcasting in radio and TV in the 1990s, and I've been writing my whole life. I didn't read a lot of comic books growing up, but I loved movies like Tim Burton's Batman and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. Ever since Jon Favreau's Iron Man, I've loved watching the Marvel Entertainment Universe expand, now into a multiverse, as it turns out. And now I'm enjoying what's happening on Disney+. Today's discussion is about the first episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. This podcast contains spoilers for at least this first episode and any trailers released by Marvel Studios, and speculation beyond this show can sometimes alter your experience of other Marvel movies, shows, and comics. So, catch up if you can, and beware. Want to be part of the podcast and have your voice heard? First, write it down. Then you send it to us. Email it to thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com, interact on Twitter at thewayphase4, or visit facebook.com/thewayphase4. It's more fun when you join in. There's no feedback yet. We'll tell you a little bit about the episode, though. It's titled New World Order. It's said to be 50 minutes long, according to Disney+, but the credits started rolling around the 42.5-minute mark, and with the Marvel Studios title sequence, you could say there's a little less than 42 minutes of screen time. The description in Disney+ says, Sam Wilson and Bucky Barnes realize that their futures are anything but normal. Now, if you remember at the end of Avengers Endgame, Steve Rogers aged in one of the time branches after returning the Infinity Stones that they stole from the past to beat Thanos. He grew old with Peggy Carter. When he reached the time of Tony Stark's funeral, he showed up on a park bench not far from his departure point. He decided to retire and seemingly passed his mantle and his famous shield, not to fellow centenarian Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier, but to his much younger friend, Sam Wilson, better known as the Falcon. Would he take up the now open position of Captain America? Who really gets to decide that?
All right, here we go.
I like it.
Ready, and...
Wait for it.
Let's get into the show. The Disney+ snap splash screen and Marvel Studios logo theme are followed up by Sam ironing a shirt and getting ready for what felt like a funeral. Now, we know this can't be Tony Stark's funeral because he's already got Captain America's shield in the scene. He packs it up, in fact. We hear the dialogue from Endgame where Sam says it feels like it's someone else's. Steve says it's not. We then see Sam is still doing work for the government, or at least he was. It's unclear if the scene is a flashback or if the ironing scene was. He's in an airplane, and we're treated to an awesome aerial combat sequence in a few minutes. What a way to start off the show, by the way. It shows off Sam's capabilities as a Falcon, shows us his superpowered drone Red Wing, his combat prowess, mastery of the winged flight with the suit, and he successfully completes his mission. It's to rescue a Captain Vasant from the LAF. Now, in the credits, Captain Vasant is listed as a colonel. I think that's just a little bit of an error there. Since he's called Captain in the show, he's probably just a captain, and it was just a typo. Now, what does the LAF stand for? We're not told. In fact, the major says they're high-powered, which is a slightly odd phrase to use because, you know, Falcon says, you know, the LAF, and then instead of saying, oh, they're the this, he just says they're high-powered. Now, that's weird, because, you know, people have superpowers in this universe, so saying they're high-powered, I think, is more than just a way to say it. I think this is actually a tip that they are superpowered in some way.
LAF.
Yeah, they're high-powered.
The LAF captured Vasant's plane in flight, apparently using squirrel suits that they end up using to try to evade Falcon. And either the LAF hired this crew, or it's now being led by Batroc, a mercenary that was hired by Nick Fury in Captain America the Winter Soldier to hijack a boat. So it's the same guy is back, and obviously he survived the snap, and he survived all of the craziness that's going on. Now, the mission took place either in southwestern Algeria or southern Tunisia, because that's the only place they could have approached the border from the west to the east, the border with Libya. It's probably Tunisia, because that's where Sam and Torres end up meeting after Vasant is saved. It's a small but pretty important scene because Torres is established here as a friend in the Air Force, and we learn some details about what's going on in the world. Sam is also working on his drone, so it shows he has some, you know, technical know-how, some technical prowess, at least with this electronic tech.
Every time Ops touches him, he gets all glitchy.
Well, yeah, those poor techs can't keep up with a billion returning IP addresses and your six-star level tech.
There's also a mention of the Flag Smashers, which is, according to Torres, even worse than the LAF. Now, while the LAF, he says, is trying to make money off chaos, Torres says the Smashers think the world was better during the blip, which is when people were snapped away. Sam invites him to keep an eye on them and let him know if things get real bad. There's a line about Captain America being held in a base on the moon. Now, that may have or may not have a payoff later in some form. I think it would be awesome to see old Cap on the moon or something like that, even if it was with Skrulls or somebody else. And I would love to see Chris Evans reprise his role, even just for a cameo, maybe interacting with Fury and Monica Rambeau at the end. And if you don't know what I mean, then I invite you to go back and listen to our series on WandaVision.
Would you not?
Back in Washington, D.C., it seems we are where Sam was getting ready to go when he was ironing at the top of the episode. He's at a ceremony. He announces he will not take up the shield, but they're going to put it in a museum exhibit honoring Captain America. He's gone. The public knows he's gone, but I'm not sure if they think he died fighting Thanos or if Captain America's just retired. It's really kind of odd. I don't know what the public has been told. After Sam finishes, a government official, and trust me, that is how Alfie Highworth is credited. The actor is credited as a government official. Well, that guy thanks him for making the right decision to bring back the shield. Rhodey, you know, War Machine, Tony Stark's friend, he's there. They have a discussion where Rhodey asks why Falcon didn't take up the mantle. Sam reiterates it doesn't feel like it's his. Rhodey, though, makes a case for the need.
Allies are now enemies. Alliances are all torn apart. The world's broken. Everybody's just looking for somebody to fix it.
And he says he'll be in touch. And then he leaves for the rest of the episode. Sam stares at the display, and then we get another scene. We get a flashback in Russia of one of the Winter Soldier's hits on a Russian. We know it's from the past because Bucky's wearing his black face mask and he has his old silver arm. During the hit, an innocent man is trying to get into his room, I guess his hotel room, but he witnesses the hit and it's clear that he gets killed. The memory of the gunshot wakes Bucky. He's sleeping on the hard floor of his apartment. It's a nice nod to lines that Sam and Steve Rogers shared when they were becoming friends about how they would sleep too comfortably on a bed out of a combat zone.
When I was over there, I sleep on the ground, use rock for pillows like a caveman. Now I'm home, lying in my bed, and it's like
lying on a marshmallow. I feel like I'm going to sink right to the floor.
We then pick up with a psychology session. It's clear he's been having nightmares. The psychologist goads him into speaking by making some notes in a notebook. It's another nod to not just Steve Rogers and his notebook of things to catch up on.
I'll put it on the list.
Bucky's own notebook that he's keeping notes on, making amends, as he calls it, using three rules set up by that psychologist, Dr. Rayner. Bucky mentions he crossed a name off his list, Senator Atwood. Now, it's a woman he helped get into power when he was the Winter Soldier. He was a Hydra pawn, and she was too, and she stayed in power and abused it after Hydra was exposed. This didn't sit well with Bucky, so he tells the psychologist how he followed the three rules, and we see a slightly more involved sequence where he puts a device in Atwood's car, hears her threaten the life of a Congressman Lockhart, and then he ends up turning her over to police by taking control of the car and threatening her henchmen. The three rules are he can do nothing illegal, he can't hurt anyone, and he has to say a line, sort of like an AA meeting or something.
I am no longer the Winter Soldier.
I am James Bucky Barnes,
and you're part of my efforts to make amends.
The psychologist congratulates Bucky on following through, but he won't admit to having nightmares. She wants him to reach out, make friends to help cope. She checks his phone, and he's been ignoring texts from Sam. He says he's trying, but he hasn't had time to deal with things. He brings up Wakanda as a time of peace for him. She wants him to acknowledge that there are good things happening for him, and she says he's free.
You're free.
To do what?
We stay with Bucky, but he's now in Brooklyn. We see someone put trash in the wrong can, and Mr. Nakajima doesn't appreciate Unique's etiquette. Unique is the other guy who put the trash in the wrong can. Bucky steps in to defuse the situation, but the man's old. And they weren't fighting, they were just arguing. Yori and Bucky are lunch buddies, and at first, I thought that this might have been a relative of Jim Morita, since I think Morita settled in New York City not far from Brooklyn, and maybe that's why Bucky was friends with this older Asian fellow we're just being introduced to here. But it became clear that this wasn't the case as scenes move forward. It was just a question, since we weren't sure why, when we just heard Dr. Rayner say he doesn't have a lot of friends in his contact list, that this would be one of his 10 friends, right? I think she mentioned 10 names in his contact list. Now, if you say Cap was one of them, someone in Wakanda probably the other, probably T'Challa or someone who would reach out to him, at least since he spent time there. That leaves 8 names. Jim Morita, James Montgomery Fallsworth, Gabe Jones, Jacques Dernier, Happy Sam Sawyer, Pinky Pinkerton, Junior Juniper, and Dum Dum Dugan. That's 8 names, and those happen to be the 8 names of the Howling Commandos. So it's probable that since we saw Marina's relative as Peter Parker's high school principal, that maybe he's no longer living, and probably not too many of the Commandos are, but I wonder who the others on that list are, if Yuri is one of his buddies, Yuri Nakajima. Bucky and Yuri eat dinner, or lunch maybe. No, it's lunch. At a diner called Izzy. And we see Yuri help Bucky get a date with the waitress, Leah. She's game. But Bucky lets on that he's not very practiced with the ladies due to his outmoded dating technique of dancing, and then says something, you know, about how old he is, I guess, and then something catches Yuri's eye. He sees some mochi, some rice cakes, and it sparks a memory of his son, who he ends up revealing died overseas under mysterious circumstances, and that's when we realize the son is the man who died in the Russia flashback. And it's clearly one of the things that's haunting Bucky, and I guess he became friends with this guy, maybe out of a desire to make amends. In the story, we head back to Sam. He's driving in Louisiana, which is not his home in the comics, but the setting kind of becomes shorthand for a backstory about his family's legacy. He visits his sister, Sarah, and her kids, who he mentioned earlier in a conversation with Rhodey. The family fishing business isn't doing so well. His sister is going to sell the boat they grew up on, but Sam is convinced. His status as the Falcon and as an Avenger is going to grease the wheels of bureaucracy and get them a little bit better loan to transform the business. After Sam and his sister go get a bite to eat, we see Bucky arrive for his date. They make small talk about the new dating scene, and then she says he reminds her of his father, and when she asks how old he honestly says 106, but she thinks it's a joke, and he kind of tries to laugh it off. She asks pointed first date questions like, where does he wear gloves? And he says, poor circulation. And if he has a family, he says he has a sister, but his parents died. And then she starts beating him in a game of Battleship. She tells him that she thinks it's sweet that he's hanging out with Yuri because the son's death really messed him up. But this kind of actually upsets Bucky, and he leaves mid-date and heads over to Yuri's house. Now, you could tell, he wants to tell him the truth. This is the pardon that he wants, that his conscience needs. Now, he's gotten one from the government. We heard that in the scene with the psychologist. But we sense that this is the only one that really matters to Bucky right now. And he just can't bring himself to tell him. So he leaves without telling him.
God, I owed you for lunch.
Back in the bayou, and Sam's at his sister's house, they go over the plan. The family fishing business isn't doing so well. They're making meals while they're going over this in the scene. It sounds like it's to sell them, and they're applying for a loan under a new business model. Sam is established as a meticulous and prepared guy. I mean, he definitely seemed that way as the Falcon, but here he's got all of his ducks in a row, and he makes sure that they leave an hour early for the meeting and to deliver the meals. Says something about, you know, if you're not early, you're late, and pick one. I think that's probably something that their parents said to him. And we go to Switzerland, and it's Taurus. He's in Switzerland. He's almost like a newspaper journalist on a story here. He starts recording using a small camera in his jacket pocket, and he's looking at his phone, and he's making sure he's at a meeting place. Then a girl whistles, hands out masks. Everyone puts them on. It's part of a bank heist diversion. And his phone alerts him to run. R-E-N-N, I think, is German for run. And then there's two duffel bags. They come out of a second story window, hit the pavement, and then so does a person, but they land safely. Torres tries to stop one of the people responsible, but he ends up getting beat up real bad, kicked in the face, as a matter of fact. So that was one bank, and now we go to a bank in Louisiana. Sam and his sister are in the meeting with the bank employee. He recognizes Sam, but he's not sure where from at first. Sam doesn't mind reminding him, and the guy kind of takes a selfie, and things seem to be going well at first. It seems like this little thing about him saying, yeah, I'm the Falcon, is going to work out. Sam segues into talking about the new fishing charter model with the restaurant, but the loan officer cuts him off, asking him a meta question, how the Avengers made a living. It's something that people wonder, right? Right down to the question where the guy asks about Tony Stark paying them. Like, did Stark pay you guys when he was alive? Sorry, you know. The loan officer is a bottom line kind of guy. Brings up that they had no income for 5 years. But Sam's sister is like, how could you have income if you didn't exist? It doesn't seem to matter to the loan officer. And Sam's point about qualifying for an SBA Small Business Administration loan is met with an explanation about things tightening up when people came back. Remember, half the world came back. Even though their family has banked with that bank for generations, this loan officer says they're not approved.
Is there any chance, and of course you could say no, that I could get a selfie with your arms out?
Are you serious?
This has to be subtle.
Subtle. Got it.
Sam and his sister argue about quitting. Sam doesn't want to, you know, quit. His sister is tired of keeping things together. So here, Sam represents all those people who came back with a renewed lease on life. But like director Tyler Hayward in WandaVision, Sam's sister Sarah, she's tired from having kept things together during the snap. In WandaVision, and here now in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we've seen two great mental health crises being addressed. Bucky is suffering from brainwashed PTSD and refusing help. Sarah is also suffering from PTSD from the blip, and she's refusing help from her brother. Sam appears to be set up to be a fountain of hope for two different people in his life. Inspirational. And I feel this is an example of why he's going to end up deserving the mantle. Steve Rogers always had the line about, you know, I can do this all day, where he stands up after getting beat up.
I can do this all day.
He must have seen that fight in Sam.
Oh, of course you can, of course.
We go to Sam trying to get the boat working again. He can tinker with a sophisticated drone, but he's out of practice on this old-fashioned boat. He has limitations, and it seems like he's got both feet in the new world and has trouble fixing the old world, which would apply to Bucky and his sister's financial problems. He can't get it working. And while he's reminiscing, looking at pictures of his family affixed to the cabin of the boat, he gets a text from Torres. He needs to get to a secure line, and there's a picture of Torres with his face beat up. So Torres tells him all about the heist and attack when he goes back to, I guess, to his sister's house. Sam wonders why he wasn't doing it online only. Torres says something like, you have to get your hands dirty. The Smashers went dark after the attack, part of their MO. And when Sam asks if there's anything else, Torres seems to wonder if he's referring to whether these are superpowered villains. He doesn't say that. He just says, oh, you think they are? But it seems like that he's like, you know, you think they're superpowered because of how powerful they seem. I think they have to be. And from where that power is coming, I'm not sure. But it could be a remnant of something, maybe that someone was putting together during the blip, a security force or something to handle the reduction of the world's population by half. And then so they imbued some people with super strength, perhaps. During the very end of the call, Sarah comes in and alerts Sam to something on TV. Remember that government official? He's on live TV talking about the need for an inspirational hero. They introduce a new Captain America. And obviously, Sam's sitting in his sister's, you know, living room, it looks like. It's John Walker. They don't say his name. Or maybe they do. But he comes out in a uniform, not the most recent Captain America uniform, but a Captain America uniform. Doesn't seem to fit him, in my opinion, very well. But he's got the shield. Rhodey is not in attendance, and Sam does not appear happy with his friend's shield and title being used by someone else.
Your new Captain America.
That was episode one of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and we're only getting six of them, so there's not going to be a lot of mystery in this show like there was in WandaVision. Things appear much more straightforward. Sam doesn't think he's worthy. We have to see him be worthy. We know the government's failing people and people failing each other. We see people struggling with guilt, remorse, trauma. We know Bucky is searching for redemption. Sam seems to be searching for self-acceptance since Steve Rogers seemed to anoint him the new Captain America. We got five episodes left. We haven't met Agent 13, Sharon Carter, though she does appear in the trailers. And we saw Helmut Zemo's name in Bucky's notebook of amends, but we did not see him don his purple mask yet or see him even in the episode. We saw Carly Morgenthau handing out masks in Switzerland, but we didn't meet her or find anything out about her. She's one of the main antagonists, I think, of the series, and she was in the trailers. It feels like we might not find resolutions to everything in this show. Now, we got loose threads of Captain Vasant or Colonel Vasant, whatever he's listed in the credits. We hear about Congressman Lockhart. I don't know who that is. Senator Atwood is heading for possible jail time. Those don't have to get mentioned again, and I wouldn't expect it to, though. Will we see Sarah's kids again? Probably not. Almost definitely we'll see Dr. Rayner again. She was in the trailers doing some other stuff, and almost assuredly we're going to see Rhodey too, maybe at the end. Yuri, the waitress Leah, I feel like they're destined to get really brief wrap-ups in the finale. Like, he comes back and, you know, has a beer with her again or something, or beats her at Battleship, and then, you know, tells Yuri, and Yuri's upset, but appreciates it. I just feel like it's something weird like that. I feel those are the kinds of things that you don't spend too much time on, but you get those short callbacks. I think we're just going to get a tiny bit of backstory on John Walker, the new Cap, and that he'll clearly either not be worthy of the mantle or be just a downright villain. I don't think Disney's brave enough to just make Sam better suited. I think they're going to go for low-hanging fruit here and make John Walker a clear villain somehow, although maybe they don't. What do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter at thewayphase4. Episode 1, and I believe all of the episodes, are going to be directed by Carrie Skoglund. She's a longtime veteran, dabbled in some comic book type TV adaptations before. Creator and writer is Malcolm Spellman, one of the producers of Empire. Episode 2 is going to air March 26th. And remember, there's only 6 episodes, so the final one is set to air April 23rd. This has been This is the Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 1 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.